Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Teachings in the Air with Sahil Thit. Today's podcast is called O Canada. And it's about the impacts of identity on my mental health, on my physical health, and my impacts on my spirit. You know, I've had struggles in my life in regards to identity. And identity actually means, is referring to sameness. So when I'm in my community, when I was a child, I was the same. You know, my parents, my brothers, my sister, my cousins, my friends, we were all the same. You know, we were indigenous. So at home, I didn't have an identity problem because we were all the same. Of course, there was differences, you know, some were tall, some were short, you know, some, you know, as human beings, we're all human beings, but we're all different. We're all unique. And as a child, I seen that. And if I happened to make fun of someone as a child because they were not the same, then my parents would correct me and say, no, that's not our way. We don't do that. So I learned to accept people that were different in my community, in my home. So identity there was not a problem. It was in my teen years that I started to learn history and also to venture out into the world. Because I grew up on the res. You know, that's my home, my community. And I didn't hear people talking about racism there or any of the things that I hear today out, you know, in the air, Instagram, Twitter, those kinds of places. So, you know, as I grew up and I started to read and to listen to different people, different professors, knowledge keepers, indigenous politicians, activists. I learned that, and through research and reading, and I come to understand that as indigenous people, there was an identity created for us. Of course, first off, we're identified as Indians. So we all became Indians in North America, South America. And I was born Stetliam. I was not told that I was Stetliam as a child because we'd all transitioned to English. And I rarely heard Stetliam, Uchulmiucht, in my community, in my home. So One of the things I discovered was that there were individuals that played a huge role in my identity, in my homeland, in my country, or on Turtle Island. You know, that who created this identity? And in my mind, you know, I reasoned that there were a few men that created this identity. That there were men that were in love with power. And power to them meant wealth, having more territory or land and water. And saying it's theirs, they have ownership over land and water and air. You know, that's power. And if they have a lot of minerals, and like gold, precious metals, diamonds, rubies, all of those that were seen as precious and valuable, worth money. So those are the ones that I've come to understand that created this identity for us as Indigenous people. The first identity that was let loose into the air were the words pagan, savage, heathens, that the Indigenous people in North and South America were pagan, savage, heathens, because we did not know who Christ was or say that we're Christians. So this created identity was shared with everyone that were coming to Turtle Island. Oh, there's savage pagan heathens there. That's not my imagination that these men are telling these men that are coming here. Because the first ones that came across the water were all men. Come here searching for wealth, to become powerful. You know that pagan, savage, heathens. In my imagination, it must have created fear in these Christians that were coming here. Oh, you be careful around those Indigenous people. They're pagans. And and you throw in that they're devil worshippers. They use the devil's tools. Their language is the devil's tongue. Created fear amongst those newcomers. Fear that transformed into anger, hate, you know, the negative emotions about my people. So that identity of Indian at the start was not positive, was harmful to us as a people. I remember when I became an Indian, I believe I was 18 years of age, and I was told to apply for a status card from the Department of Indian Affairs. That would be my identification card. So I applied for it, and I got this card. It had my picture on there, and it had a number. And I looked at the card, and I was reading it. And it was you know, I got it from the Department of Immigration of Canada. Those were the ones that were making the Indian status cards. And how weird is that? Here I come from a community, you know, that say they're living there for 5,000 years and I'm being considered an immigrant. Immigrant. I don't think people, those men, knew the impacts, that this is the lasting impacts that this is going to have on Sahilfit. You know, as time went on, you know, they started to, who's they? These men again, in power. That's what I believe. The ones in power were creating identity. You know, that they added to that Indian one word that created havoc in our indigenous society, our families and individuals. And that's problem. That we're an Indian problem. Just before we're in reservations, one of my elders told me, Jerry, wherever there was fresh water, our people were there. Hunter-gatherers, either hunting or gathering food and medicine off this territory that we existed on for thousands of years. You know, where I'm from, there was gold in the rivers and in the mountains. These ones from across the water, these Europeans, wanted that gold. That word Indian problem. You know, they started to add to the identity of my people that I heard as a teenager. That we're drunken, stupid, lazy, crazy, stinking Indians. You know, that created identity when you let those words loose in the air and the children hear them. Of course, all children absorb what they see, hear coming through the air. It lands on their ears, goes into their mind and body. You know, the one that really got to me was drunken Indian. Because I would see intoxicated friends and relatives from my community. So I knew that, you know, we were drinking. And some unfortunates became alcoholic. And of course I would see those as a, you know, a tween and a teenager. And of course, I shouldn't say of course, but what happened was I felt ashamed. You know, because to see someone intoxicated in public. Then I started to become ashamed of my identity as Indian. I didn't want to be an Indian. Shows you how messed up and confused I was then. Because I couldn't change my identity. I am who I am. I witnessed what happens to any human being in poverty, you know, and we're incarcerated on the Indian reservations. And one of my elders said, Jerry, those are minimum security prisons in Canada. I witnessed seeing angry people. And I didn't know what they're angry at, but they're angry, and they're angry at each other, at themselves. I seen violence. I seen depressed people. Unhealthy people. It loomed so big in my mind, I could not see the healthy ones, the resilient ones. I bought into this, that we're all crazy, drunken, lazy, stupid Indians. And the ones I saw seemingly had no shame. And their only purpose seemed to be was drinking. No gumption, no get up and go. That's what I imagined. But this is an important lesson. It's wrong. It was wrong of me to be the judge and jury of an individual that is intoxicated, because they were not intoxicated 24/7. When they come out of the haze, the alcoholic haze, you know, they were human beings that would care for their home, you know, and do what every human being does. You know, it's true that we were in poverty. And you can't help that if you're on a reservation and there's no jobs. And that the public of the Canadians were not hiring us in huge numbers, because they had this identity that we're stupid, lazy, that they cannot trust us as a people because of that created identity. And that poverty, it's so sad for me because of my understanding I've gained from watching and living this life, that created identity of Indian. The quality of our food went down. You know, we were hunter-gatherers, and hunter-gatherers were healthy, fit people. To survive with your own two hands requires fitness, being physically fit, mentally fit, spiritually strong, to go out and gather the food in the mountains, in the lakes and the rivers, enough to live every day. To preserve food for the winter time when the snow comes and the lakes are frozen and the rivers. To have enough food to survive for the winter and still be healthy, which requires protein, you know, and fruit, a dry fruit and different vegetables. That required huge fitness. Healthy mind to do that, to survive, to live a good life. So when you put people on a reservation, there's a boundary there. I remember I'd see them on the reservation. There were stakes driven into the ground with numbers on them. Became like our wall. We cannot hunt beyond that boundary or do anything beyond the boundary. We're on the reservation. So there was laws made on hunting and fishing off the reservation, where we could go before and get what we needed. And we done it in such an intelligent way that there was nothing going extinct when we were here by ourselves, and there was plenty of deer, moose, fish, grouse, fruit, berries. So you take that away. The quality of our food changed, and there was an introduction of salt and sugar into our diet, and alcohol, and flour. And that has had an impact on our physical health, our well-being. Salt and sugar is not just a indigenous addiction, because I see it as an addiction. You know, and you go to fast food joints, there's lots of salt and sugar in the pop and on the fries, and even there's a salt shaker, you can add more. But that had a tremendous impact on our health as a people. We're overrepresented in physical ailments in this country. The one example of diabetes. Oh, the harms of that. I've seen some of my relatives, their eyes start to get impacted, their body, their kidneys, from the diabetes. The other impact, being locked on the res, of course, is our houses and our clothing, you know, every part of our life. We're in these small res houses at the beginning of reservations, overcrowded. At one time, everyone made their own clothing. You know, materials from Mother Earth and from the animals and birds. And they made their own clothing. And I'd see pictures of them, and they looked so good. They looked beautiful. Buckskin, you know, different furs. You could see, I could see that self-assurance, that good self-esteem. And these photographs of, I've seen of people dressed in the clothing they made. When you're poor, you buy what you can afford. That includes food and clothing. So as I watched this growing up on the res, I started to become depressed. Not angry or afraid so much, but just depressed at what I was seeing and hearing. And then I look back and it was not 24/7. So the depression I experienced lasted a while. It stayed in my mind. And I did not see the beautiful things. So that was the impact on me being an Indian. Then as I continued on my journey, and I started to, when I tell people I come to when I quit drinking and drugging, and I started to see the beauty, the resilience in people. Would say, yeah, I'm an Indian. I'm a good Indian. You know, I'm a powerful American Indian movement from the United States. You know, we started to change that image of drunken Indian, but a good person. And I started to bring back the language and the music to the people of how it used to be before colonization. And I started to listen. That's why I believe I survived. They call me a survivor of residential school. And I add to it, I'm a survivor of colonization. It's because I started to listen and to see the goodness of indigenous way of life, of ceremonies, of, you know, the teachings about puberty rites, you know, the training methods that they used to help the babies and children become part of the circle. No one was left behind. I see, that's a beautiful way of life. Started listening to the elders. You know that we're there all the time. That we're there waiting. Because it switched around. And I could remember vaguely elders talking in community meetings and everybody listening. And today it's sort of turned around and young adults, middle-aged adults talking and the elders listening. And as I've told you, I started to listen. And I would hear positive, undefeated indigenous people that refuse to be victims and live in anger, fear, or depression, but embrace our identity, embrace our teachings, embrace our music. And I started to look for them, and I would listen, and I'd absorb their teachings that they'd lay at my feet. And one of the ones that I heard was the late, great Chief Dan George. I'd seen him in a CBC television series where he's an elder. And of course he's wise. He was wise. He was wise. I listened to his relatives. One of his sons became one of my teachers. And of course he ended up in movies. But I just loved his message. So I heard this message in Canada's birthday, 100 years. And I heard his message. This is years after he gave the message. But I heard it and it inspired me and motivated me to another level. So I want to share that with you.
How long have I known you, Canada? 100 years? Yes, 100 years. And many, many years more. And today, when you celebrate your 100 years, O Canada, I am sad for all the Indian people throughout the land. For I have known you when your forests were mine, when they gave me my meat and my clothing. I have known you in your brooks and rivers, where your fish flashed and danced in the sun, and whose waters said, "Come and eat of my abundance." I have known you in the freedom of your winds, and my spirit, like your winds, once roamed this good land. In the last 100 years since the white man came, I've seen that freedom disappear, just like the salmon when they mysteriously go out to sea. The white man's strange customs I could not understand pressed down upon me until I could no longer breathe. When I fought to protect my home, called a sad.